Case number 09-1042 et al. Net Coalition Petitioner versus Securities and Exchange Commission. Mr. Phillips for the petitioners, Mr. Pennington for the respondent, and Mr. Henkin for the intervener.
Mr. Phillips, good morning.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court. My name is Carter Phillips, and I'd like to reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal, please.
All right.
I'd like to start, I think, where we have common ground among the parties. First of all, it is accepted by all sides that the New York Stock Exchange, ARCA, is an exclusive processor of information and therefore subject to regulation by the Securities Exchange Act under Section 3A. And second, that the depth of book data fees that are at the issue in this are in fact reviewable under a fair and reasonable standard, so that there is some form of rate making that has to be applied. All of the parties agree to that extent. The point at which we come to disagreement, obviously, is the extent to which a fair and reasonable assessment can be made without any regard to costs whatsoever, particularly in a market that is a brand new market where we've never had any efforts to sell this particular type of data before, and we're trying to evaluate whether or not the fees are fair and reasonable. And it seems to me that the sort of fundamental question you would ask yourself in that situation is if you had a reasonable allocation of the fees and you said, you know, that this basically represents a 10% profit and 90% of the costs, then you would say, okay, that's a pretty reasonable way to proceed. But if you, on the other hand, thought that this was 10% of the cost and 90% of the profit, then the only conclusion you would draw from that is obviously that this is a not fair and reasonable fee under those circumstances, or at least you would have to take a harder look at the basis on which those fees are being determined. And that's particularly true, it seems to me, in this case where New York Stock Exchange ARCA specifically said in its application that the part of the reason why we're asking to put in fees, because we didn't charge anything for this historically, the reason we're doing this is because of increased costs that we've incurred. It seems under those circumstances perfectly sensible, in the absence of a completely deregulated environment, to say, fine, if there are additional costs that justify these particular data being charged, then put forward those costs, let us see what they look like, and then we can make an assessment of whether or not it's a fair and reasonable evaluation. It seems to me that is the fairest and most reasonable understanding of what a rate-making rule requires. Just in fair and reasonable rates typically start with the notion of cost. As courts established that on a number of occasions. Historically, that's what Congress would have understood in 1975 when it imposed this kind of a requirement. We're talking about exclusive processors. The legislative history is quite clear that they should be treated like any other kind of regulated industry where it's, you have essential information that's not accessible by any other source. And under those circumstances, the right solution is to regulate it. It may turn out in time, after you've regulated for a while, that you can comfortably conclude that there's a place to deregulate. And you've certainly seen that in the electric and natural gas oil pipeline situations, where because there were clear substitutes available, that ultimately the agencies that regulated those particular activities could conclude that they could rely on the market. But here, we don't have any direct market substitutes for this exclusive data that NYSE ARCA has put forward in the circumstances of this case. And in the absence of something that we can turn to that says, yes, we are confident that these prices will be constrained, then it seems to me a complete, at least abuse of discretion, if not contrary to the statute itself, for the SEC not to insist on having some cost information made available to it so that it can evaluate that and then be in a position to make a judgment, at least in the first instance, that these are just and reasonable rates.
Is that the same case with NASDAQ's total view that the SEC approved back in 2002?
It's the same basic problem is embedded in that.
So I thought you began by saying this is a brand new field. Am I incorrect that back in 2002, the SEC approved exactly this type of market-based approach with respect to the NASDAQ depth of non-core data?
Right. In 2002, the portion of the SEC acting on delegated authority approved this, and it wasn't subsequently reviewed under those circumstances, so it was allowed to go into effect. If the court were to conclude in this case that some form of cost analysis is appropriate for any kind of rate setting for fees for depth of book, it would be available to the parties to go back and ask the SEC to take another look at it, and frankly, it'd be in the authority of the SEC to take another look at it, and candidly, I assume that they would. I mean, it's interesting that the rationale that was put forward by NYSE ARCA in this case, in the first instance, was, you know, our fees are reasonable because they're less than the fees that were charged by other monopolists under these circumstances. Now, the commission didn't embrace that particular perspective. I think that makes a lot of sense. But, you know, the reality is that we're talking about three major players in this field who have a significant ability to influence or control the costs that they're going to impose on users of this information. And the commission's answer is ultimately to say, well, I just don't know how much everybody needs this information. Well, that's all well and good, but we know that at least 19,000 subscribers are out there and significantly want the information. I can represent quite confidently, because of my clients, that there are lots more who would do so if the prices were more reasonable than they are today. And if you look back and you think about sort of the regulatory history, I mean, my guess is that whenever the railroad started up, there were probably not 19,000 people using the railroads. There were probably just a few hundred, and everybody else used wagons to get things across. And over time, it became more and more popular. So it is in the nature of this kind of undertaking. When you start a new market and you create a new opportunity, people have to learn about it. They have to develop the expertise in order to be able to use this particular tool as they go forward in their investment decision making. And so, you know, to sit here and say, well, we'll just leave it in the hands of the market rather than take some evaluation of the actual costs seems to me to simply sort of cast all of those people aside and to constrain a market that would otherwise be in a position, hopefully, to develop in a proper way so that you can make an assessment down the road that whether or not...
Let me see if I understand some of this. Part of what I think the agency says is if this price is too large or too high, they'll go to one of the other processes for the same similar data.
Right. Well, they will say, I mean, they don't actually say that.
Right.
Because you can't do that because their data is their data. I mean, the New York Stock Exchange knows what's on their market, and NYSE ARCA knows what's on its. They don't, you know, buying one isn't a substitute for the other. So they just say it has some sort of generic ability to constrain. So you can at least get some information.
Rejecting that suggestion that you can move from processor A to processor B.
Right. Clearly, that's not...
Because they're not offering the same thing.
Right. It's not the same data. It's fundamentally different.
And then I think
you're
also saying to the... I want to make sure I understand this. To the extent that they are offering some things that are similar, they all have market power, for want of a better term. If the price is set too high, then there are groups of people who will be excluded from using all three. They just can't.
Right, absolutely. Some of them can't even use one, much less all three. But the reality is, you know, if you want to be in a position to make use of this tool, you really do need from all three. And so, therefore, you really are at the mercy of whatever race they set. And the notion that the three of them now are basically in this situation where they're pegging against each other and saying, well, as long as my rates are slightly less than the next rates, it'll just continue to escalate up and the rates will continue on, particularly given the ruling now from the commission that's under review in this specific case, in contrast to the ruling that came out in the previous decision by the division, because now they've said, we have concluded that because there is competition for orders, all of the exchanges are subject to some kind of a constraint on the cost they're going to be able to impose, and therefore, presumptively, whatever number they come up with is basically a number they get to make the call on. And then we'll see whether or not there are any supervening considerations that would justify a different undertaking in this context. But the court, I mean, the commission, you know, doesn't come to, you know, to the, you know, leaves that issue, you know, basically now to the market.
Lay out your order flow argument. You're saying, I think the commission will hear from them. They're relying very heavily on that. And you're saying that doesn't really constrain the fee setting at all.
No, because the decision as to where you're going to place an order is securities and transaction specific. If I want to buy Google, I want to buy Google. You know, somebody, you know, I'm a broker dealer. My customer says, I want to buy Google. So what am I going to do? I'm going to go look and see where I can execute the best opportunity for Google. The question of whether or not I'm going to get depth of book data for a particular exchange is something I will have made months ago, because I have to subscribe on a monthly basis, and so I have to have that information available to me.
Isn't there an argument that if you want to buy Google and you want the best deal and you think depth of book is required, that you'll go to the exchange that offers depth of book, and you'll ignore the NYSE because they're not making their exchange attractive? That's their argument, right?
I don't know that they make that precisely that way, because the problem is that doesn't make any sense, because if you go to the place that gives you the depth of book, it may be the smallest exchange, and its depth of book could be 10 shares. Mm-hmm. It may not have any more than 10 shares available, whereas for Google, which I think is a NASDAQ exchange, on the NASDAQ, let's assume it for purposes of argument, you know, that's where all the liquidity is. And if you really want to buy thousands of shares of it, the only place you can find that out is by going to the NASDAQ depth of book.
Assuming I'm understanding their argument that this is an element by which exchanges differentiate themselves and make themselves more attractive doesn't really work. That is, that depth of book is not the relevant factor with respect to where you're going to trade.
But I think at the margins, it can be a relevant factor for the unusually small exchanges and operations. But once you get to a certain level of strength, and NYSE, ARCA, NASDAQ, New York Stock Exchange clearly are in that category where nobody can make you don't have the option of saying, I'm not going to trade on those exchanges. That's just not something any realistic person can do. And so you're going to have to buy the depth of book. And since it is an exclusive processor for each one of them, And since just and reasonable or fair and reasonable rate making is the statutory requirement, then it seems to me it's incumbent on the commission to say, look, we'll look at the cost data, we'll make an assessment, and then we'll decide whether or not these are fair and reasonable rates. We're not going to simply leave it unregulated.
Are you withdrawing, or am I misconstruing your argument Roman numeral 1 as compared to your argument Roman numeral 3? That is, you're nodding to suggest at least you understand what I'm asking, which
right.
is the way you're putting the argument now is that, yes, perhaps competition could be a way of guaranteeing just and reasonable rates. There isn't enough evidence here that there's competition, therefore arbitrary and capricious. That's Roman numeral 3.
Right.
Roman numeral 1, at least as I read it, was
the statutory interpretation.
Statutory has to be, can't be dependent on competition.
Right. What the court said in Goldstein versus SEC is pretty much the way I come out in this particular case, because in that case, the court said even if the Act doesn't foreclose the commission's interpretation, the interpretation, you know, is outside the bounds of reasonableness, and so it doesn't matter whether you sort of look at it as the statute or look at it as.
Of course, it does matter, but it matters in the sense if we held
it
the.
It matters for the long haul. It doesn't matter for the specifics of this case.
Which unfortunately
right.
matters to us because we're writing an opinion.
Well, it would matter to me, too, my client in the long run as well.
Goldstein was saying no matter how you look at it, it fails. Which is also to say it fails under Chevron 1, 2. I mean, I remember it quite well.
Right.
What Judge Garland is asking you, are you pretty much moving away from the Chevron 1, 2 argument and resting primarily in arbitrary and capricious?
Yeah, I'm not abandoning the Chevron 1 argument. It just seems to me for purposes of what Judge Edwards, you asked about earlier, how do you write this opinion? If it were me, I would write this opinion to say we don't need to decide whether or not the statute precludes that. That's an argument for another day. But we do need to decide that cost is a fundamental element of any kind of fair and reasonable rate making. That's statutorily mandated. And until we are fully convinced and the commission can make a showing based on a mature market that cost isn't a consideration or doesn't need to be a consideration, the statute demonstrably
that's
pushes us in favor of
that's
regulation.
That's still a different question. So under what I regarded as your Roman numeral 1, cost is relevant because in regulated industries, we look at cost and we give some return above cost. That's how it's done. If I look at your Roman numeral 3 argument, the argument is cost is relevant because super competitive profits indicate lack of competition. Those are two very different ways
to look at cost. I agree with that, Judge Garland. And, you know, my basic, you know, my first argument is still, I think that Congress intended that there would be, in fact, cost regulation. But I recognize that even in other situations where fair and reasonable rate making is part of the practice, at some point, it is possible that the commission might be in a position where it could deviate from a pure cost-based analysis to something else, because there's a lot of precedent that suggests that. I don't think that's the way the statute was teed up, but if the court were not prepared to accept my statutory argument, that at a minimum it has to recognize that the statute provides more than indifference as to whether or not there ought to be a regulatory scheme in place that protects consumers and ensures that the rates are fair and reasonable under the circumstances.
One more question. As I understand it, depth of book information, the SEC has not required it to be published. Is that right?
That is correct.
So if you were to win and they were to decide, okay, we're just not going to produce this stuff, could they do that?
Yes, they could do that. Obviously, we would have to go back to the commission and make a pitch that we think that's a terrible mistake and that ought to add it to the consolidated data.
But at least they could do it during the period of the rate making or whatever it is we were going to call this proceeding. So you could, and given our experience with rate making in other cases, this could be multiple years before you come out with a rate that you regard as having been, forget about whether you regard it, but the agency regards it as being just and reasonable other than purely competitive. Is that right? I mean, we could be 3 or 4 years from now before any depth of book data is published.
Yes, although I don't know that that's necessarily the assumption I would make, because, again, remember, when they filed the application, NYSE ARCA specifically said that we were doing this to recover specific costs that we have in mind. I don't know why it would be particularly difficult if they had that information back when they filed the application, why they couldn't simply release those data now.
Well, you would undoubtedly disagree with the data. That, I mean, your argument is about marginal cost.
Right.
And I'd say almost all economists agree that in the real world it's very difficult to evaluate what marginal cost is. Right.
Well, I think it's harder actually to allocate fixed costs to rather than
well,
it is
to add that
marginal
to it. But that doesn't suggest that the rate making proceeding is going to be very easy or quick. I mean, they may have a view about what their costs are. You are very unlikely to agree with it. So
right.
There has to be a proceeding, right?
Right, but that I don't know that necessarily requires it to be a 3 to 4 year proceeding, because we're not asking for pure rate, you know, a pure regulated rate making process to be undertaken. Our basic position here is that you cannot make a determination of whether something is just is fair and reasonable without at least some assessment of what the thing costs to begin with. And you've got the Pandora
exactly.
problem.
And what I'm asking about is, you know, we want data to be out there.
Yeah.
We want, and there's going to be all different kinds of data over the next few years that may be good to be out there, might not. And if in each situation there has to be the kind of proceeding that you're talking about, aren't we slowing down the release of the data?
Well, I think the alternative way to think about it is that the exchanges would recognize that their costs for this are virtually non-existent, and that they will then adopt the view that previously existed, which was to offer those data for free in order to better serve transparency and protect the consumer's interests. I think that's just as legitimate a likely outcome of this as the alternative, which is that we're going to have to slog through all the rate
making. So you think that the exchanges have this sort of eleemosynary, or whatever the pronunciation of the word is, attitude about things, that they're going to release it for free just because they like transparency? That's not the approach you're taking in your brief in terms of their motives.
No, to be sure. I understand that. But I think what they'll recognize is this goes back to the same point the commission made about the relationship between the people who use the exchanges and the exchanges themselves. There's obviously an interaction there. Now, these are for-profit enterprises, so that those interactions have changed to some extent, but they're basically their customers. And if we really want that information, if there's a significant call for it, my guess is they will realize that it's in their best interests, not necessarily in a profit-loss basis, but just simply in the best interest of protecting their customer base to go forward and provide the information for free.
One more question. This is a fact question I'm not sure I understand. With respect to the core data, the brief suggests that the fees for that are negotiated, not determined on the basis of cost.
So far they have been, yes.
And is that because the agency has been unable to figure out what the cost is?
Or? No, that's because the agency, I think, has placed a fair amount of pressure on the parties to come to some kind of an agreement on as to the cost, and they've done that so far successfully. But obviously, if at some point the negotiations were to break, or those understandings were to break down, then I think the commission would have to undertake a pure cost-based analysis in the same way it does with the tape, you know, with the consolidated tape, where the exchanges provide the information and they get it back, they have to pay the fees for that. I mean, the fair and reasonable approach in that situation, according to the exchanges, absolutely requires an analysis of the costs in order to come up with something that's fair and reasonable. All we're asking is whatever's good for the exchanges when they have to pay a fee ought to be good for their customers when we have to pay a fee.
Are there proceedings to determine that?
And how, yes, there are proceedings.
How long do they take?
The commission's order asking for an analysis of 10 or 12 questions was a year or so ago, as I recall.
Okay, thanks.
Thank you, Your Honor.
All right, thank you. Mr. Pennington.
Good morning. Mark Pennington for the Securities and Exchange Commission. It was thrilling to hear the words eleemosynary and the securities market in the same sentence. In 1972, when the commission first recognized that market data technology had reached the point where it would make sense to tie all the markets together and to create a national market system, it recognized at that time that there was always going to be this tension between unification and diversity and their downsides of monopolization and fragmentation. And as it's gone through the last 30 or 40 years of implementing the national market system, that's the issue that comes up constantly. And it comes up here. You have market data that is useful to investors. You could require it all to be disclosed. You could leave the exchanges, the markets, to just decide what to disclose. Or you can come up with some balance. And the commission has come up with the concept of core data, which is basically last transactions in quotations, requires that to be distributed, and then leaves the non-core data, including depth of book data like we have here, up to the individual markets to decide whether they want to distribute it or not and whether they want to charge for it or not. And it's subject to the commission's oversight. It has to be, among other things, the fees have to be fair and reasonable. And the commission has not deregulated the area. It has set up a two-step test that starts by asking, is there a competitive market? Are there competitive pressures on the exchanges that will keep them from overcharging, from charging monopolistic fees for this data? And if so, and if there's no countervailing arguments, then we rely on the market. Let me talk for just a minute about the statutory issue, which would be Roman numeral one, I think, in both briefs. The language of the statute it requires the fees to be fair and reasonable. And it doesn't say there has to be a cost-based analysis. And the statute, in fact, Section 6E1B of the Exchange Act, which was added in 1975 at the same time, expressly does say consider costs when you're deciding whether to unbundle or whether to allow the exchanges to set commissions. So Congress had that in mind. Sometimes cost-based rate making is essential. Sometimes it's not. And this court has held in a number of cases, particularly in the natural gas and electricity area, that when there's a competitive market, the regulator can rely upon market-based prices in lieu of cost of service regulation to assure a just and reasonable rate of return. So we think the statute permits us to do this. And we think, so I'd like to turn then to the second issue, which is sort of the APA issues. I'd like to point out, first of all, that the commission, there are no sort of administrative law issues in terms of the commission here, noticed this matter three times. First, when it was submitted, second, when it decided to take the matter from delegated authority, and then third, took the extremely unusual, perhaps unique or nearly unique step of putting out its proposed order and says, this is what we're thinking about adopting. Give us any further thoughts that you have. And each time obtained additional information. So the commission has really looked hard at this. What's more, it's been looking at this very issue, how much to charge for market data, really since the National Market System Act was passed in 1975. So we come to it with a lot of experience and a lot of hard thought. And the petitioners say, well, what you're really required to do either as an absolute matter of statutory interpretation, or at least until you get some more experience with this type of data, is first of all, just figure out the cost. After all, what could be more reasonable than that? Then you have a yardstick you can measure it against. You can hold it against.
Could you focus on the Roman numeral three argument, which has basically been retreated to? So that is why costs don't have to be evaluated for purposes of determining whether there really is competition here, not whether costs have to be evaluated for purposes of setting a regulatory rate.
Well, I think the threshold problem with the petitioner's position is that their assumption is that it would be easy to figure costs. They just figure that out. But what the commission has found is that it's virtually impossible to figure costs. You may be able to figure out, depending on how the market's set up, the sort of, if you think of as a market as generating market data, and then the market decides to start selling its data, so they say, well, we'll come up with some kind of a connector to connect our market to the world. You might be able, depending on how that's done, to figure out that sort of direct cost. But that's not how rate making is done. If you're going to figure out cost, you have to allocate a reasonable amount of other relevant costs of operating the market, which generates the data, to the market data. And that was what the commission talked about in the 1999 release. It said, we haven't ever done this. The parties have always agreed on the prices. Would it be helpful if we came up with if we laid out some standards for figuring out costs? And the industry said, no, it's a meaningless exercise. And the commission pointed
out. What is to prevent, under that theory, cross-subsidization?
Well, the theory is, or the belief is, if there's a competitive market, that acts as a check on the price.
But the competitive market is not for depth of book data. It's overall, your argument about it is it's one exchange against another.
Well, our argument is, though, that they won't, our argument is that the order flow and the depth of book are, as one of the commentators said, two sides of the same coin. That the exchanges use, and you can't really even separate them out. The markets operate and they generate this data, which has value. But if you don't distribute the data, you don't get the order flow, and consequently, you don't have a business, which is, and that's by far their largest profits come from the order flow, from the order flow
itself. Right, but your own, you know, part of your argument for why we should let this go is it's not that important. Not that many people want depth of book data. Only 5% of the NASDAQ customers buy it. What else did you say? A similar line, you said 99% of the shares traded at the MBBO.
Right.
That suggests that depth of book is, to coin a phrase, the tail wagging the dog here. It's not very important for order flow.
Well, if it's not important to investors, then you can't exercise monopoly pricing over it. The point would be.
Well, you can for the investors who it's important to. You can. I mean, just because things are unimportant doesn't mean that you can't get a monopoly price for it.
Right. And if to the extent that it is important, there's a competitive market among the markets, the sort of combined product of order flow and depth of book data, which are interrelated. To the extent that it's not important, there's no ability to exercise monopoly power.
I guess it depends on. I guess it depends on how many people it's important to. If it's only important to a small number of people, then it may not matter for order flow, but you still may be able to make a profit off of those people.
Well, let's look at the evidence it had. First of all, let's look at what the evidence was that the commission relied on, because I don't know that it got into quantifying that amount, but what you have to bear on the other hand, is that the cost is not going to be a perfect substitution. It's not going to be a solution to the problem. In other words, you say perhaps there's some people out there who can't get this data that would like it, so why don't we just figure out the cost? But we don't think we can meaningfully come up with a cost. So you're going to distort the market by coming up with what looks like a cost number, but it's artificial. I mean, you're in an area where you don't know, you can't tell exactly what you're going to do to the market. But the commission had a substantial basis for believing that the competition for order flow, and given how many people are going to want it, is going to be a useful check on the price. And
where's the evidence on how many people are going to want it?
The evidence we have is that not very many people buy it.
Well, there you go. That hurts, doesn't help.
No, but the evidence that the competition for order flow will be a sufficient check on the price for the data.
Why?
This is the record evidence that the commission relies on, which is testimony, or the starting with back in 2001, we had the special advisory committee, and they brought up themselves that the motivation to enhance shareholder value by the profits, the concern was that the exchanges are now for profit. So they're going to start charging a lot for this data because they're not just selling it to their members. The motivation to enhance shareholder value by increasing market data fees will be checked by the need to make data available to generate order flow and attract listings.
Well, that's just a conclusion. Well, what's the evidence of that, other than this advisory committee's statement? The evidence?
It's a self-serving statement, too, isn't it?
Well, I mean, Your Honor, this brings us back to the Ely Wilson. This was an advisory committee that was put together across the range, and there was a division within the committee, but it wasn't just the markets. Maybe it was just the markets that thought it would be adequate, but Everybody here has an interest. The commission has
the reason we're asking this is when we read the briefs on workflow, I'm not getting the argument. I mean, one part of the argument makes sense. When you flip it, it doesn't. I just don't see the connection. So that's why I think Judge Garland asked you, where's the evidence? What are you pointing to? And now you're saying, well, an advisory committee speculated.
Though it was the judgment of people who were experts in the industry that this would, I mean, there are no numbers. So it's a judgment about how much influence does it have. Second, when NYSE ARC, and again, this is certainly self-interested, but when they filed, or when, in the connection with their application, they said, this is a factor we've considered when we've decided what price to set. And other
I mean, that really, with respect, that's not worth anything. That's the other side saying, you know, leave us alone from regulation because don't worry, we're competitive. I mean, that I'm not saying that doesn't mean they're right or wrong, but it's not evidence. I mean, your opponent cites a lot of quotations from the exchanges saying how how important the depth of book data is going to be and all that stuff. And you blow that off as not important because that's just marketing information. So, I mean, to what extent are we going to take the views of the exchanges on this?
Well, they have a reasoned position, which was, and the commission was persuaded by it. And then in response to the final notice, there was an economics study submitted that came to the same conclusion, that this would be an effective competitive market. To the extent that it matters, the price will be checked. We don't have numbers, but the alternative solution, we don't have cost numbers either. As I say, that's going
to
be.
Was there any determination made in the study as to the number of folks who might want it would be foreclosed?
No. I mean, the market price will foreclose some people. Everybody, if you charge something, you're going to foreclose somebody. The evidence is you're not foreclosing a lot of people because not a lot of people want this data, and if they want to get it somewhere else, there are available substitutes for it. So our judgment is it's not essential data, and we are satisfied based on the evidence that was available to us that there was competition for order flow will be sufficient to check the possibility of monopoly pricing.
Well, what was your answer to their they cite, I see on page 46 of their brief, the NYSE ARCA's marketing document saying, now more than ever, in order to see and estimate true market liquidity, you need to look beyond just the top of book price.
The evidence is, if you look at the...
So that it is necessary. It is now essential.
If you look at NASDAQ, which offers this, and this is the company that has 5% of the people buy the security, BATS was giving the stuff away. ISE was giving the data away and got 15%. I mean, it's a relevant factor. Some people use it, mostly professionals who are in the business. This is not something that's essential to ordinary investors or most ordinary investors. There may be somebody somewhere who would like to get this who can't afford the fee and won't have it available. But the alternative is to either say you can't charge for it, in which case you run the risk that it's not going to be distributed, or you're distorting the market by using a cost-based mechanism that is not going to come up with a number that you can say, well, that's useful. I mean, even if we come up with the cost, I guess you still have this question of you can't quantify it exactly. The agency has to make a judgment based on what's the record before and what's its experience with this type of data.
It really sounds like your argument, you're going back and forth, and I'm not sure. It sounds like your argument is essential. Well, it's not essential, and we can't figure it out anyway, so let them do what they want to do. That's what I keep hearing. It's not essential. It's like, who cares? And we can't figure it out.
Well, I think
obviously, the folks who want to increase the fee have figured out something because they said we want to charge fees because our costs have gone up. So they figured out something.
But they haven't done any kind of an allocation that would be a.
Well, then how do they know their costs went up?
You shouldn't
have accepted. Their proposal.
We didn't base it on their cost representations. We based it on the judgment that we would let the cost be set by a competitive.
But what I'm saying is, they made the proposal. Significantly because they said they were incurring increased costs. So obviously someone figured it out in-house, and I bet you they can figure it out in-house.
Well, they can.
I'd be stunned if they couldn't.
No, they can figure out. I'm sure that whatever their increased discrete cost is, they know that. But the commission has said since 1999 that the harder problem, the impossible problem so far, is to allocate the common cost, the cost of operating the market. Some part of that would have to be paid for.
Can you tell me, where is that? I was just looking for that. Is that in the final order?
Which?
The SEC's conclusion that it would be impossible or very difficult to figure out costs.
Yes, it's...
just help me with that. I'm not saying... I'm sure it is in here. I'm just trying to focus on that now that you're emphasizing it. Starts at JA 688, the order.
Well, I've...
Maybe I'll give the intervener...
The quotation from the special study and is where the commission had talked about the fact... there's a discussion in the opinion. I can't lay my finger on it, but it is in there about how in 1999 we proposed it. Nobody had a solution. The industry was against it. The advisory committee was against it. Nobody has come up with a practical way to do it. So if you have to make a choice between letting some theoretical people be deprived of data that's professional data and that's not essential data, alternatively to undertake this cost allocation process that nobody knows how to do, our choice is that we believe there's a competitive market, we believe there are available alternatives, and that all in all, the best result here is to allow competition to solve the problem.
After you sit down, if you could just take a quick look, and or maybe the next speaker will know where to point us to.
Thank you. Mr. Hinton.
Good morning. May it please the court. Douglas Hankin representing the interveners. I wanted to jump to, Judge Garland, your question. I believe the place that you were looking for, although it was just based on a quick look, starts on page 61 of the order. But to jump into some of the issues that were being addressed, under antitrust law, and this is something that that has not yet been really dealt with by any of the speakers, one of the important options that has to be considered in assessing competition is market participants' abilities to just say no to a product. And that's really where the action has been on this. Judge Garland, I agree with your point about the tail wagging the dog, because this is, depth of book fees are a very, very, very small aspect of the market. They're not the core fees. They don't represent core data. The SEC explained back in Reg NMS in 2005 that it was going to allow proprietary data to be sold by the exchanges under exactly the rule and the regime that it set forth here. So just saying no is an option. And when you look at the evidence that exists in the record, that goes to, in the ISE case, that when it was free, when ISE was giving the data away, only 15% of the professional, of the participants took the data. NASDAQ, only 5% buy the data. When Island went dark, and the petitioners say when it went dark completely, that's actually not true. It was a more controlled experiment than that. When Island stopped displaying market data for three ETF funds, their market share for order flow with respect to those three funds declined by 50%. And the SEC also looked at...
So how do those two things fit together? That is, only a few people want it. Mm-hmm. But when it go dark all to get, when you go dark altogether, you increase by 50%.
Decrease
by 50%. How do those two fit together? If only a few people want it, why does going dark lead to a decrease of 50%?
Well, with respect to Island, I can't speak to precisely why. The point is that it demonstrates the connection between order flow and market data.
The Island one does, but how does that make up? How does that? What do I do with the 5% figure? That seems like it's not particularly relevant to order flow. Otherwise, more people would buy it.
It is, because it's indicative that the SEC was correct about the importance of depth of book data and, more importantly, who it's important to. It's important to people who are trading very large market sizes. This is not about the retail investors. You need to look at the actual market here. And all of the evidence is, including one piece that I'm going to get to in a moment, all of the evidence confirms that the SEC's views of the way this part of the market works were right.
Okay, so this, just so this is actually is an explanation, mm-hmm. and that explanation is that for the big investors, it matters, and where they go matters. That is, it matters to which exchange they would go to. So let me ask two questions about it.
You agree with that?
Is that what you're saying?
It depends what the word matters. When you say it matters in terms of competition for order flow, yes.
That's what I mean.
Whether the depth of book data is actually important for their trading decisions, I'm not sure I would agree with.
Well, then why is order flow affected by that if it doesn't affect?
Well, order flow is affected by it because depending upon what data, what market data a participant gets, that will determine or help determine where it sends its orders. And if the quality of the data that it's not getting, if the quality of the data that it gets from one market center is better than the quality of the data that it gets from another center, all else being equal, that will tend to nudge the orders to the market center where the better data is coming from. So they're competing in that sense.
Right, so you're saying that depth of book is important in the sense that it nudges you, could nudge you from one exchange to another.
My only question is with the word important. It's something that is competitively of value. The data itself isn't important. Where I'm struggling is whether it's important for the trade execution decisions, because the petitioner's argument focused on evaluating their best execution obligations and what the SEC concluded.
Leave that part aside. But for purposes of evaluating, why else are you going to be pushed from one exchange to another based on whether it has depth of book, if not because it's important to your trading decisions?
Well, it could be because it's important to where you steer the business. That is one possibility. And then all of the other aspects that go into markets or participants deciding where to route their orders. And the SEC went through a long list, and actually NYSE's submission in the record went through a long list of how market participants direct their data. First, they try their orders. First, they try to internalize it. Then they try to send it to non-exchange markets like ECNs and alternative trading systems. Only after they've gone through all of those do they then try to send it to exchanges. That's the way the analysis goes when they're trying to determine where to send the orders. And within there, the availability of market data and the quality of that market data can be a factor. And that's why the competitive position that
raises two questions in my mind. First question is, sounds like you're saying that with respect to retail, there isn't really any there is no competitive effect here.
There is no competitive effect for retail investors because they very, very rarely, and the record clearly shows this, have any need for depth of book data. On an access basis, though, the proposal doesn't treat them differently if they feel that it's necessary.
I thought the fee is different, isn't it?
The fee is different for professional versus non-professional, right. But it's available to both if they want.
Right, but the fee for non-professional, you're saying there's no competitive pressure on it.
There is competitive pressure because if nobody buys it, then the exchanges won't sell it.
That's different. In other words, the order flow pressure doesn't exist.
It is less in the individual investor perspective, but that is primarily, and the record also shows why this is true, the individual investors generally don't determine where their orders go. Their broker-dealers usually determine where brokers go. And so if you look, for example, in the record, one of the things that the SEC relied on was the Schwab data, and we also mentioned this in the intervener's brief. The Schwab data that showed that I think it was 94% of orders were directed by Schwab not to an exchange at all, and that therefore there was no effect on that depth of book data could have asserted on those orders. So it really is a broker-dealer issue, not a retail investor.
Mr. Phillips' other argument was, that this raised in my mind, is some things like his example, at least a hypothetical example, was Google was traded in with enough liquidity only in one exchange. So that there really, this could not be, the order flow couldn't be a competitive factor with respect to that. Is that right or wrong?
With respect to that, we just disagree, and we think the record disproves it. There has been declining market share. Basically, the theory that the petitioners are relying on is this notion that listed markets have a monopoly, and listing markets have a monopoly in trades of the shares that are listed in the first instance on those markets. The SEC looked at that and looked at it exhaustively in terms of statistics and concluded that, in fact, those market shares had been declining and that no listing market has a majority or a monopoly share of trading in its listed shares. And, in fact, from NYSE's perspective, that share had dropped from about just under 80% to around 30% in just a few years. And you contrast that with something like the BATS exchange, which is also discussed in the record, which went from zero to just under 10% in about 3 years, in part by offering some of its market data for free. So there's an extraordinary amount of fluidity in the order flow as between exchanges. And the main reason for this is that the SEC has, as part of shepherding the national market system, allowed for unlisted trading privileges. And that's one of the things that has caused all the fluidity between the markets in terms of where the order flow goes versus where a security might be listed in the first instance. We just think that the petitioners have got the data wrong in that regard, and the record clearly reflects that the SEC was right. Thank you.
All right. Does Mr. Phillips have any time left? You have the answer to the question. All right. Why don't you go ahead and tell Judge Garland that?
In the opinion, page number 74 at around notes 254, and page number 100, note 313.
Yeah, I got the 100. Thank you.
All right, Mr. Phillips, why don't you take a couple minutes?
Thank you, Your Honor. I appreciate it. I will try to be brief. First of all, Judge Garland, you asked the question about the tail wagging the dog in this particular context, and I think ultimately that's the core problem with the Commission's approach in this case, because what it's basically saying is that this is too small an enterprise for us to spend any time worrying about. And candidly, that sounds an awful lot like what the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission said about in the Texaco case, which is that the small producers are just too small and it's too important for us to let them go out and handle their operations. So what we're going to do is we're just going to deregulate it. And what the Supreme Court said there was, that's fine. Go tell Congress that you have the authority to deregulate it, and then you can proceed along that path. But what you can't do is set up a scheme in which you're supposed to make a determination of the fair and reasonableness of the rates, and then decide unilaterally that you're not going to do that because either they're too small or too unimportant under these circumstances. The reality is there is a market there. There are people. They are captive. They have to go and look at depth of book data, as their own marketing materials say. And it may not be true for everyone, but for those for whom it is true, they are subject to the monopoly pricing. You specifically asked the question, how do we know that there is no cross-subsidization going on here? The answer is, we can't know, because we have no idea what the costs are. And under those circumstances, the assumption ought to be that there is the possibility of cross-subsidization, something specifically that Congress precludes in this particular scheme. I see my time is up. I'd urge the court to set aside the commission's order.
Thank you.